On the right, filling in for Greg Hughes, I'm Chris Blake, and today, running for mayor.
On the left, Jim DeBacchus, did Salt Lake City help move the prison to the west side?
I'm Natalie Gochner in the political center. Google Fiber is great, the Utes in the Sweet 16 even greater. This is Both Sides of the Aisle, but first this news. I'm Natalie Gochner, and this is Both Sides of the Aisle. I represent the political center, and I am joined in the studio in Salt Lake City with Chris Blake from the political right. Chris?
Good morning. Great to be here, Natalie.
Nice to have a political guru in the studio. And then I got this new name for Senator Jim DeBacchus. It's Rhetorical Wizard Jim DeBacchus on the left.
I don't know what that means, but I'll say good morning, Natalie and Chris.
So I was gone last week, but Both Sides of the Aisle didn't miss me too much. But I still am hoping to talk about some things from the session. I hope that's okay. And let's start out by talking about Governor Herbert's role right now. Session ended. He has these 20 days to veto bill. In our state, the governor has a line item veto, so he can go right into the details and veto something. Chris, are you seeing anything on the horizon that Governor Herbert would veto?
You know, the governor immediately jumped out and took out some of those issues that were really receiving a lot of publicity out in the public. One of them was the reintroduction of the firing squad, which the governor had quickly signed. And so he's really there's no big topic kind of things that has really gotten the public's imagination. There's obviously a couple of bills dealing with tax increases that I think we're going to talk a little bit more about today just generally, but some issues that he might take a second look at. And there's always going to be something. Sometimes there's technical issues or a procedural issue that might come up as they review bills. But they're looking closely at all bills right now to see does something rise to that level.
And there's not anything that's obvious on the horizon that you're seeing.
Nothing that I've seen that he hasn't already signed.
So this might be a governor that's done a pretty good job in the session to get what he wants. It could also be, Jim, this interesting dynamic of Medicaid expansion, which you can't stop talking about. But he's got to manage some interesting legislative relationships right now, because the likelihood is there'll be a special session ultimately in the coming year, and he needs votes.
You know, the procedure for passing a bill, and I'm not quite sure what it is even now, it's long, it's complicated, it's miserable. Sometimes it's years, it's coalitions, you got to have hearings everywhere, you got to get it sent over to the other body, they get more hearings, somebody can hold it up. It is a long, tough, as it should be, process. So when you're the governor and you get this list of bills and you decide, yeah, I'm going to pick this one out, I'm just not sure on it. You got to understand, you're making an enemy, sometimes maybe a lifetime enemy, when you take a sponsor and a co-sponsor and perhaps a group of people that have worked hard. So Gary Herbert now is trying to line every vote and every maneuver he can on Healthy Utah, which will come up probably in a special session here. He's got to be careful which chickens he's plucking.
Yeah, it's so true. I remember being in the governor's office, and on days when the governor would announce vetoes, it was a scramble, because you have to have a veto letter that explains the veto, but you also have to have the governor call that legislator, you know, and deliver the news that I'm going to veto this. I remember one involving Marta Dillery. She was a representative from Davis County. She had a bill that would have given a sales tax exemption for the electricity purchased by Lagoon. And Governor Leavitt didn't like narrowing the sales tax base. And he vetoed it, and it was at a time when she was suffering from cancer. That was a really hard call to make. You've been on the other side of this, Chris, when the legislators get the calls.
Yeah, absolutely. And, you know, the last couple of years, what I've seen, and I assume Governor Herbert will continue this tradition, it's something he's been doing, there's opportunities for him to sit down with the legislator and maybe some of the interest groups involved to discuss the bill. Maybe there are, rather than stopping short of a veto, there's something that can be done. They agree on a little fix that he wants to see. But it's a real interesting process, because the governor wants to be involved early so that he doesn't have to veto anything, but not too early. And yet at the same time, there's a number of bills passing, and sometimes there's issues that come up, even issues after the fact. And so I'm sure there's probably 5 to 15 bills that they're taking a close look at right now, and maybe even starting to have discussions with legislators about to say this is something that's rising to the level of a possible veto.
The dopey firing squad bill. I mean, we're sending the message loud and clear. Utah on the weirdness level goes off the top. He should have vetoed that just to be the only state out there with a firing squad. Dumb. Maybe they should have had some kind of Iron Curtain or Zion Curtain somewhere. It's just inexplicable.
That would have been yours. Let's talk for a minute about Healthy Utah and what's next. We know that there's a Supreme Court ruling likely come out June timeframe. Isn't that the
correct
court's schedule? And this would deal with the potential subsidies for the Affordable Care Act. Jim, what was the word as the session ended about what was the next step with Healthy Utah? Unfinished business, the expectation that there'd be a special session, or was it just sort of a ran out of gas?
It was to a lot of sick people in our state. It was a strong message, drop dead. I mean, they did nothing. Legislators shouldn't even cash their paycheck. This was the most important issue of a generation, and they passed on it. They wouldn't even allow a vote in the House except for some tricky maneuvering that was on an amendment, and it didn't have anything to do with Healthy Utah. This is a shame for the state of Utah. Shame, shame, shame.
Okay, on the political right, let's get a rebuttal there. But as you do this, Chris, think of I read the stat that for every dollar Utahns send to Washington, we get 66 cents back. And we certainly didn't help that this session by not taking any more federal money.
Yeah, it's an interesting discussion, and it's not a case where Republicans or the right here is unanimous. I mean, you have the state Senate who passed Healthy Utah. You have the governor who's been strongly pushing it. And you have the House that felt like there wasn't enough sustainable long-term projections to be able to pass this in a smart way. And so the House, the Senate, the governor have said, you know what, we are going to continue to work on this. And I think this speaks to the legislature's general feeling of doing the right thing, doing it well, and not being pressured by artificial deadlines.
Mm-hmm.
I don't dispute for a moment Senator DeBacchus's concern about people that are actually suffering and that are really caught in a difficult position here. But the legislature has to balance long-term budget projections and those types of things so that they don't get in a position where they can't meet those obligations. And I think those are far more important to the legislature about making the right decision rather than the timing. So they've agreed that they will continue to sit down, work on that. You have a Supreme Court hearing that could change or disrupt the apple cart here a little bit. And then as we get closer to the mid to late summer, I think they'll find a solution that makes sense and that can be voted on and will be passed by the state of Utah.
One of the big surprises from the session, just something to wrap up this segment with, was that Utah State University, and through the appropriations chair, Lyle Hilliard, landed $1.5 million for the Aggie athletic program?
Correct.
I'm seeing some nods. Did you – it had this strange title, the Utah Wellness Program. Jim, how did this go down in the Senate?
the NC2A – under pressure from apparently some unionizing players. And let's face it, in basketball, for example, there's $4 billion in the pot.
Mm-hmm.
And the players get not a dime. They get an education,
mm-hmm.
but they don't get a dime. Their parents can't come watch them play. That's a violation. Some of them don't have enough money for food. Mm-hmm. They're hungry. It is greed of an extraordinary, in my opinion, of an extraordinary extent. So what the NC2A said is we're going to start giving players some money. And Utah State apparently didn't have enough money to pay it. So unlike all the rest of the athletic programs around, Utah State is going to get $1.5 million to pay this salary, or whatever we're going to call it, to those student athletes. It's a weird thing.
On the political right, did you see this one going down, or did you read about it after the fact?
No, it went to committee. It went through the process, just like all appropriations need to. And it's a kind of a tricky situation for Utah State University, moving into the bigger programs, but not the level of the Pac-12 and those that the University of Utah and others are able to do. So,
yeah, well, an interesting one. I got to tell you, I have not attended USU, but I've loved what they've done in their sports program. Good for the state. In our next segment, we're going to talk about the potential of Jim DeBacchus running for mayor of Salt Lake City. This is Both Sides of the Aisle. I'm Natalie Gochner, joined by Chris Blake and Jim DeBacchus. Stay tuned.
On the right, filling in for Greg Hughes, I'm Chris Blake.
On the left, filling in for Jim DeBacchus, Jim DeBacchus.
And in the political middle, where real problems get solved, Natalie Gochner, this is Both Sides of the Aisle. Jim, I can't help but ask, don't want to spend a ton of time on it, but there's a lot of whispers out there about you looking to run for Salt Lake City mayor. What do you want to say about that?
I'm going to spend the weekend down talking to the Red Rocks with Stephen, and we're going to go down and see what I'm feeling inside. You know, I'm old. I'm not much of a jogger. I'm not going to be up there like my good friend Lyle in the Senate for 40 years or 50 or like Howard Stevenson.
Not much of a jogger.
I'm going to decide, should I spend the next 6.5, 7 months running, pounding on doors, being there, raising $500,000 and taking Ralph Becker on or not? And I think I need to decide if I've got it in me and would I be a good mayor, and that's what I'm going to do. I'll decide in a short time.
Chris, let's see what the Red Rocks say to the what I called the rhetorical wizard of Salt Lake City.
On the right, we love to see the crazy liberals all going against each other, you know, beating the heck out of each other. Normally we're beating ourselves up, so we love to see it, and we encourage craziness in Salt Lake City.
Well, that gives me a good segue then to go to Ted Cruz, because he's doing just the same thing to you on the right. Jim, did you listen to his announcement?
Okay, here's what got me going most.
Okay, let's
about
hear
the whole speech. He's at Liberty Baptist University, which was started by one of those
Jerry Falwell.
So he's in their basketball arena, and they got 15,000 students at Falwell University, and they're there. And his first words were, "To the biggest Christian university in America, in the world." And I went, holy smoke, how uninformed are you? Or is that a slam against Utah? I'm not putting up with it. I'm not voting for you, Ted Cruz. There it is.
We were all worried that Jim might slip a vote to Ted Cruz. Actually, he'd probably do it to disrupt the Republican side, throw a vote that way. You know, Ted Cruz, is an interesting figure in the sense that he certainly tries to drag the party to the right. I don't think he's going to be the nominee. Don't think he'll have a lot of support here in the state of Utah, but it will be interesting. I guess if I were to start an early gripe, it's, are we really starting the 2016 presidential race in 2015 in March? And apparently we are.
How about this political ad that shows Ted Cruz with our favorite Governor Palin, and it has them, you know, running for president and vice president, and then it says this ad paid for by the Hillary Rodham Clinton campaign.
I wouldn't blame them.
You know, talk about disruption, though. I'm really interested to read this new New Yorker article about Ted Cruz. I heard it profiled in NPR or something today. But this guy's got an Ivy League education. This guy is a debate master. He's going to be disruptive here.
Yeah, no question. And I think a lot of people I've seen just in the last day or so, as he's gone out to donors, that he's surprised a lot of people with the amount of donations he's been able to bring in, the level of support he feels like he has. What the problem is I see for Ted Cruz is he's become a caricature, mm-hmm. and that sometimes becomes a danger. And, you know, even Hillary runs up against some of that as well.
You bet she does.
Saturday Night Live and some of these caricatures. And so does he have real ideas? And that's what he's going to have to communicate to the public now, is what are those ideas and what are going to get people excited and willing to vote for him? And that's a hard task in the world we live in with media and social media and the way things move so quickly.
It's going to be a fun year. I don't know how to segue from Ted Cruz to the prison, but I think we should talk about the prison, because everywhere I go, I do a lot of speaking on the Utah economy, and I'm always getting asked about the prison. What's the legislature going to do? Where did it end, Chris?
Well, here's where it ended. The prison is going to move,
and it's
going to move out of Draper. The legislature set aside, if I'm not mistaken, $80 million to help expedite that move, and have really signaled that this is the process. Now what's going to happen is the Prison Relocation Commission is going to continue to meet and analyze different sites that have been suggested that have all of the necessary needs in order to find a place that's suitable for the prison. In addition, in the bill about the Prison Relocation Commission, a 0.5 sales tax was offered to the community that receives that prison because of the impacts that it would create. And so that has led many to believe that that is going to end up in Salt Lake City. Now, when people think of that ending up in Salt Lake City, you know, they think, oh, we're going to end, the, you know, put this down by Temple Square. The reality is the location that's being suggested here in Salt Lake City is in the far western quadrant, out past the airport.
Think Great Salt Lake Shores.
Yeah, absolutely. But I just want to say the legislature is making a really wise move here. There is a great opportunity in the South Salt Lake Valley, northern Utah County area. It's time to move that prison. It needs to be rebuilt regardless. A lot of money is going to be spent for that. They passed criminal justice reform to help reduce recidivism within the state of Utah. I think this is a great move by the state legislature. I think they'll find a suitable location that makes sense and one that won't have the problems for a long, long time that the Draper site has here now.
Jim, from the left, do you see it any differently?
Yes. Look, the first year we arrived, on the very outskirts of our territory, we built the Sugar House Prison. It was outside of the city, and, you know, it was a trek out there. And then until the 50s, that's where the prison was. So in the 1950s, we decided we need to push this out where no civilization resides, and it went out to Draper. And then, of course, the valley grew, and suddenly now it's in a relatively congested area. Now as we look to the next 50 or 60 or 70 years, we need to decide where should we put this. And frankly, there's not a lot of growth area for Salt Lake City. And while I agree with Chris, it may not appear as though that's a valuable piece of property out there just to the west of the airport, it is valuable. It's incredibly valuable. It's going to be what's going to bring the Adobes and all of the high development, high tech, non-polluting future of the state. And to have that airport be the view of a prison as everybody arrives is a bad idea. And process-wise, Jerry Stevenson and the Prison Relocation Committee, they got their bill done, and suddenly, a few minutes before midnight, somebody snuck an amendment in there. I read that bill three times before. Somebody from Salt Lake City snuck an amendment in there. This additional 0.5% of sales tax is not from the state to help whoever gets the prison. It is a tax by the community that gets the prison, supposedly to help pay for the prison. It's undefensible as far as process. If Salt Lake City wanted to have 0.5%, you know what? Fine. You want a pay increase? You go to the committee. You have a hearing. You let the public know. You don't slip it in. Some members of the House, Democrats from the city, didn't even know it had been slipped in there. Mm-hmm. It was a despicable way to get an increase in a tax. It's not something that Ralph Becker would have been in favor of 8 years ago. This is kind of sneaking it in fast and dirty at the end, and the city ought to be ashamed of itself for trying to sneak that 0.5% sales tax increase in there in the dark of night. And it passed, by the way, so the West Side may well end up with a prison and 0.5% sales increase to pay for the prison.
Chris, I have a feeling that the Red Rock has already been speaking to Jim DeBacchus.
Yeah, I think so.
It sounded like someone it. Who was defending Salt yes. Lake City. You know, I don't know where to come from the political middle, but I'll say this. I don't think a prison should be in a neighborhood. You got to find a place where it is not in a neighborhood. And to me, that points you out in Tooele County way. But there are places in the Northwest Quadrant that are bordered by uninhabitable lands that keep a prison close enough to the court system and the healthcare system and the volunteers and the workforce. And it just might be an okay solution. That's my opinion from the middle.
Yeah, this is such a difficult issue because there's no one perfect place, and there is a feeling that we need to keep it close for volunteers and for the courts and for medical services. And so it's a real, real strange dynamic.
Well, and the point with the tax increase is that in the case of Salt Lake City, the capital city, it has burdens that no other city faces. Most importantly, so much of its land not taxable because of the government buildings and the LDS church infrastructure downtown. And so this is a way for Salt Lake City to meet its needs. But I understand what Jim's saying. Residents will pay that tax, but the visitors will as well.
Sure.
You're listening to Both Sides of the Aisle. I'm Natalie Gochner. I'm joined by Jim DeBacchus on the left and Chris Blake on the right. I want to talk for just a second about tax increases. I think people are going to be reading some stories as people as people analyze the session. They start to see more behind the scenes. And there was a property tax increase this session. That doesn't happen very often in this state. $75 million tax increase. This is SB 97 by Senator Osman. This dealt with equalization, capital equalization, if I'm not mistaken, in our school system. The one other tax increase, and then we'll just talk about whether these are appropriate, was the motor fuel tax reform and tax increase. This is a $125 million plus tax increase on Utah residents. Chris, you're on the political right. Normally you'd be against growth in government. How did you – I mean, you know,
well,
where did you come down on these?
Here's what's interesting. It passed a Republican legislature, the 75 – let's talk about the $75 million property tax increase. Here's the other big shocker. Senator Howard Stevenson, state senator and also president of the Utah Taxpayers Association, supported this tax increase. And his feeling is that equalization is an important enough issue that it requires a readjustment of the property tax rate. So that's the real
shock and surprise. And this deals with the idea that some school districts are rich, have a rich property tax base, some don't.
Yep.
Equalization means that you're basically taking from Peter to pay Paul, but it also avoids lawsuits down the road.
It does, and what it says is regardless of where a student lives, whether they live in Nebo or Alpine School District or Park City or Salt Lake City, we have the responsibility as the state of Utah to assess and give that child an equal opportunity, an equal education. And so that's really the interesting issue here. It passed by a more narrow margin in the House, and I think it's interesting. But I think it also shows the responsible nature of the legislature. The property tax hasn't been adjusted in decades, and it was something that they felt needed to be done.
Speaker Hughes. I'm going back, showing my age
yeah.
there. Speaker Hughes. They end up having the same first name, just to my. But Speaker Hughes had made the point that he wants to leave the state better, and he found it, you know, and then ushered through two tax increases. That's a big deal, Jim, on the right.
Yeah. I mean, no, it really was. I was proud, particularly of the Senate.
17
I know
years since we dealt with the motor fuel tax. 17 years.
You know, it is what they claim as conservatives is their philosophy. Why should roads not be a user tax? Repairing and building of roads ought to come from the gas tax. Right now, a third of all of the money that goes to pay for roads and construction and transportation comes out of the general funds of the state. It's like a giant subsidy to pay for roads. It ought to be up there, and I would have put it higher until there is no subsidy from the general fund to pay for transportation. It ought to pay for itself. That's what we keep hearing out of the legislature again and again and again. So let's go for it.
I want to take the last few minutes of the program to talk about March Madness and the Utes in the Sweet 16. But real quickly before we do that, we had our state school superintendent, Brad Smith, issue an apology to Utah teachers for his late session comments about Christmas and the budget for education. Any quick commentary there from the left and the right?
It's hard. You know, it's the end of the session. I kind of hated what he said, but there it goes. It's easy to say something, and I'm very sympathetic to anybody that just says something dumb because I'm the king of it.
And thankfully, he apologized quickly.
Well, and that's what I was going to say. Kudos to Superintendent Smith for apologizing. I think his point was kind of back to this. You know, they increased a 4% WPU. They did a $75 million in property tax increase for education. They made a significant investment in education and probably made comments, clearly made comments he regrets, but also apologized for it and owned up for it. And kudos to him.
All right. The Utes in the Sweet 16 playing Duke. I'm excited about it. I think Duke's going to win, but I want my Utes to get this.
No, the Utes are going to roll over Duke. It's not even going to be close. Jakob Pertl from Austria-Vienna is going to show the Chicago boy Okafor what it's like to play basketball in Europe. Go Utes. Utes by five. I'm all in.
Amen.
Amen. That's good. All right, let's go to gripes. I'm going to save mine for the very end. Chris, do you want to go for yours first?
I'm going to say, and Jim's going to love this one, the legislature doesn't get the credit in the public that it deserves. They work hard. They pass a responsible budget.
The governor can't even find something to veto.
Exactly. They address issues year after year. Kudos to the legislature for a responsible budget, a great session, and for addressing a lot of issues. Kudos to Speaker Hughes and President Niederhauser, their leadership teams, for really guiding us through a great session.
That sounds like a good report card for the legislature.
Yeah. Worst bill. Worst bill by far. The legislature gave $30 million so that the state school board can flip a finger to Washington and turn down all the Common Core money. It's despicable. If Utah turns down its Common Core because of ideological difficulties, and to have the state stand behind and make up that $30 million is a serious mistake meant only to appease a small group of right-wingers. Bad, bad, bad decision.
Chris, did Utah by 5? Do you have a prediction for the game?
Utah by 34.
I think Duke's going to get the win, but I'm a realist. But congratulations to Chris Doviak and the Utes for getting to the Sweet 16. My gripe, I'm going to do what Jim often does. I'm going to flip it. I'm going to congratulate Salt Lake City for landing Google Fiber. Advanced fiber optic grid for Salt Lake City. Good for the economy. Good for the residents of Salt Lake City. Gigabyte speeds. Very good for Utah. Very good for our capital city. It's nice to not have Provo be the only one with Google Fiber in the state. You've been listening to Both Sides of the Aisle. I'm Natalie Gochner. I've been joined by Chris Blake and by Jim DeBacchus. The program is produced by Ross Chambliss. Thank you for listening.